And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, this really is a historic week, especially with regards to the United States, which in the annals of American exceptionalism, or why America is exceptional, I don't think you can do better than this. The Supreme Court figured out a way to do time travel. And I think, you know, aside from the people who've been writing popular science and science fiction for years about it, I think mankind has always wanted to do time travel, and now the Supreme Court has figured it out. Alito has figured out a way to go back in time 350 years in terms of the rights of people. Because that's where he goes back to justify making abortion rights not right.
Yeah, but remember, their time travel only goes in one direction, and that's backwards.
Backwards, yes, exactly.
Right. You know, and let's face it, I mean, Donald Trump also wanted to go backwards, but he was only going back to the 1950s.
He wasn't a Yale graduate.
No. Well, he was a Penn graduate, but not Yale, you know.
Yeah.
The Alito thing, though.
And Alito got into history now. I mean, let's face it, Alito will forever be teamed with Taney, the author of the Dred Scott decision, right, as one of the most reprehensible jurists America has produced.
Yeah, that's going to be his legacy, but I think he relishes this as his legacy.
Good, because it is his.
Yes. But let's, there's a couple of things. First of all, it's not final. And the question
is...
Well,
it's not final. What you mean is this or that sentence might not be there, but you don't doubt that this is what's going to be there.
The result. Yeah. We're not entirely sure. And, of course, the Republicans only want to talk about, the terrible thing that someone leaked this, not the terrible thing that the opinion reads.
Yeah.
However, I was looking at a variety of analyses and listening. I had to go to Philadelphia this week. I was listening to one on the radio, and they were going through the mental gymnastics that Alito was to try to isolate this case and say that it's so unique that you can't use it for anything else, because he knows that the logic of the case can be used to, what you say, turn the clock back for hundreds of years.
Those comments that he makes, saying whatever he says, that's really not part of the law. That's just his fluff on his own writing. That's what you would call obiter dicta, comments outside the outside the enforcement provision of the law. Noodling.
Yeah, but you know, he goes back and he said that unlike other things, that abortion had been outlawed before. It was never written in the Constitution. It was never part of a mainstream type of jurisprudence. And he cited some people. One of the persons he cited was this guy Hale, an Englishman. Who's become infamous as well, because he fashioned a jury instruction that said when women claim rape and they get on the stand, that the jury should take into account that sometimes women lie about this. But the bigger thing, and what was more quickly brought out by legal scholars and non-legal scholars alike, is that although Alito goes back and tries to say our country never had laws that allowed this, or abortion was never a part of the Constitution, remember, when this was written, women were not part of the political debate. There were women were not at the Constitutional Convention. Women were not allowed to vote. Women were not allowed to hold public office, or they weren't on the courts. They weren't even allowed to go to law school. Women weren't e- were were considered in some ways property of their fathers until they got married, and then they became property of their husbands. They couldn't own, in some instances, property in their own names. All of these things that Sam Alito, of course, willfully ignored. I didn't say he was ignorant of, but, you know, like you said, he went to Yale, so he just probably willfully ignored those things. And the ramifications of this, this also goes back to the Borkian model and the Federalist Society model. You know, for years, the Republicans claimed that all of this animosity in Supreme Court hearings emanated from the Democrats on the Bork nomination. And what they you know, they have this verb, Borking. But what they really forget is that Robert Bork Borked himself. He was the one that his own writings, and he was very proud of them, and he testified to them, were out of the mainstream. The big one is that he didn't see any right of privacy in the Constitution. And of course, that meant that the holdings on a whole host of cases, for instance, the Griswold versus Connecticut case, where the court said that a married couple has the right to privacy to use contraception in their marriage, and the Loving versus Virginia case, which banned the discrimination in marriage between people of different races. And of course, then we're going to get into the gay marriage issue as well. But Bork was the guy who, you know, wanted to turn the clock back, like I said, then to the 1950s, and he didn't make it. But people also forget that Scalia, who wound up on the court instead of Bork, was approved something like 96 or 97 to nothing. So it wasn't and Scalia was just as conservative, and he became even more so. But it was Bork himself. It wasn't the Democrats that did this thing. So we've had these kabuki theater hearings ever since, where people don't want to talk about their judicial philosophy or anything like that. But we did have the evidence of at least three current justices who said that they regarded the law stare decisis, and then didn't uphold stare decisis very well when it came to Roe v. Wade.
So I want to say one thing about Alito's argument about to justify his point of view. He says it's not historical in American history. Mm-hmm. So what? You know, American history is based on slavery. That's historical. And then we got rid of it. Of course, it took a war.
But, and a constitutional amendment.
Yes. But that happened.
Yeah.
Right? So naturally, it was not historical. It was just the opposite. The opposite was historical. We did have slavery. It was horrible. Why is the appeal to history significant? I don't even think it's compelling. It shouldn't be significant.
No. He's just trying to justify.
I know, but I don't see why that justifies it.
I know. I
mean, we burned witches. Should we now burn people we don't like? I mean, literally burn them? That's part of our tradition.
Yeah. But what's part of our tradition also is misogyny. And we're seeing this across the board, the muscularity emerging again against women and all sorts of things. For instance, a lot of the laws that if Roe versus Wade is indeed overturned, are going to have no exceptions for rape or incest. We had that. There was a Republican running for state house in Michigan, and it was a safe Republican seat. It had never been held by a Democrat. And he was caught in a discussion on the air saying, you know, I've got daughters, and if they're raped, I tell them that if you're going to be raped, you might as well lay back and enjoy it. And he didn't think anything of this. That's the attitude. There was a woman legislator, I can't remember whether it was from Tennessee or whatever, where she said, if you're raped and you get pregnant, it's an opportunity.
Well, the truth is, and I think the Republicans will come to embrace this, rape is part of the American tradition. You couldn't have built America without rape. After all, at a certain point, the slaveholders opposed the slave trade, the international slave trade, right, because the international slave trade stood in the way and was competition with their own breeding of slaves, which was a big, big and lucrative business. These slaves were not bred except through rape. African Americans are not pure-blooded Africans. They are ultimately the descendants of people born from rape. Rape is the fabric of America. We should embrace rape. I think Alito should claim that not only should rape not be an exception, rape somehow should be, I don't know, venerated. It's the American way.
Well,
rape of black women, that's the main thing.
Yeah, well, there were two ways there. One was this kind of breeding where they, you know, paired women up, whether they were, and they wouldn't allow in many places slaves to marry. They paired them up just for procreation purposes. But you also had the slave owners.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Well, we had Thomas Jefferson.
We had them all. I can't imagine any of them didn't. Rape is endemic in exploitative relationships.
Yeah, and then we have this thing, you know, in Tennessee, this new marriage law. I think we talked about it.
You mentioned it. 11-year-olds, 6-year-olds, 10-year-olds.
Yeah, no minimum age for marriage. So
that's a form of rape, right? There you go.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, we used to have this concept, the age of consent.
Why should the woman consent?
But they say we don't want the woman to have to consent, you know.
Exactly. That stands against the American way of rape.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That's what we're looking at here. We're looking at here.
So now the question becomes, because I think in no matter how it's written, it's a fait accompli.
Yeah.
Where do we go from here? Well, first of all, let me know that this would never have happened except for several accidents of history. Number one is the last two Republican presidents won, even though they did not win the popular vote, or at least Bush didn't win it the first time. And they've put 5 people on the Supreme Court.
Right.
Roberts, Alito, and the 3 Trump appointees.
Right.
And, of course, Mitch McConnell had an awful lot to do with the last 3.
Right.
So elections matter, and people who, you know, couldn't be bothered by getting out to vote, or, you know, what difference does it make, or Hillary's got emails, or, you know, they're not a perfect candidate, they're finding out all of a sudden that elections do matter. But this is a long-term strategy of the Republicans. Remember Falk's rule number 1 of politics is think long-term.
Right.
And they've been doing this. They funded the Federalist Society to bring these folks along, to encouraged them to join and to get them placed as clerks in the courts and ultimately as judges all across the country. This is a long-term plan and it's worked
and well-funded.
Sure, the Koch brothers and all these other groups, and they continue to fund them. And who knows behind the scenes what kind of things, you know. I mean, Jenny Thomas gets well funded to her crazy ideas.
These ideas, which you call crazy, are not so crazy because they become mainstream ideas, and they're not crazy. They're just bad. They're very bad ideas. And, you know, today you're talking about personal freedom, right? You're talking about gay marriage. You're talking about contraception. You're talking about abortion. How about tomorrow when they turn their guns on on public education, or they turn their guns on public housing? Because these people don't believe in public education. They don't believe in public housing. They don't believe in any kind of a social safety net.
Well, that is the libertarian point of view.
But that's who these guys are.
Yep. The libertarian.
I've been talking to these fellas. I first met one of these guys in 1968. I became friendly with him. It turned out, I thought he was kind of a schnooky guy. His name was, I hate to tell you this, his name was Murray.
Okay.
But it turned out he was the intellectual father of the libertarian movement of that generation. But anyway, I ran into him and became friendly with him. We were talking, and he would tell me stories about how you couldn't have public housing. I thought he was kidding. Shouldn't have public education. I couldn't imagine anybody, this guy was a college professor, I couldn't imagine anybody seriously saying these things. I thought I was a pretty sophisticated political guy. I really was taken aback when I realized this guy means it. If he had power, he would end public education, public housing, welfare, unemployment insurance, Social Security, all of it.
Yeah. This is the libertarian platform. Yeah. They're still running on that platform.
Yeah.
The Koch brothers and what have you. You know, there's a tendency now, you know, particularly among these ultra rich and the billionaires, they kind of pick a cause, and because they don't want to be taxed, they become more libertarian because they feel that the less the government does, the less money that they'll need, and the less they'll come after us for, you know, and their way of thinking is steal things, and we've seen them pop up in various places. We talked about Art Pope down in North Carolina, who essentially bought a legislature for the Republican Party. And now in Pennsylvania, I just came from a conference and they were discussing, we have another billionaire on the Republican side who wants to buy the governorship. Apparently, last time he managed to buy a Supreme Court seat. He was the biggest donor on the Supreme Court seat for the Republicans that they won by only maybe 25,000 votes. But, in Pennsylvania this year, there's a both a vacant seat on the Pennsylvania governor and a vacant seat in the U.S. Senate. And all the money has been going to the U.S. Senate race.
A lot of money it is.
Oh, yeah. Over $40 million just between Oz and McCormick. But the governorship race, the Republicans have raised virtually nothing. The Democrats cleared the slate for Josh Shapiro. And he's been raising money. He's got probably somewhere in the teens, $15, $18 million. He just started spending on television, mainly to get his name out there. But the Republicans, their people have not raised a lot of money, and have not spent a lot of money. Some of them are in the hundreds of thousands rather than the millions. And a lot of people think that the winner is going to be Doug Mastriano, although Lou Barletta does have a chance. By the way, this weekend was the first sign I saw for Lou Barletta, one single sign.
Oh, I saw a sign for Lou Barletta, too.
Yeah.
Lou, the jobs governor.
Whatever. Is that the one that was black with his logo? Anyway. But we were told that whoever emerges from this is not going to have to worry for money. That there's going to be about $20 million coming his way. And it's going to come from a single source, essentially. A guy named Jeffrey Yaz, who is an options trader. Some people say he's the richest guy in Pennsylvania. Turns out he's been one of the top 10 political donors in America. I mean, I'd never heard of him. You know, we've heard of the Mercer family. We've heard of the Uline family. We've heard of Sheldon Adelson, the late Sheldon Adelson, the DeVosses.
Peter Thiel, your buddy, Peter Thiel.
Yeah, Peter Thiel. Well, he's trying to buy a Senate seat in Ohio.
Well, he spent $20 million on it.
Yeah. But this guy, his whole object is to do away with public education and have charter schools. And, of course, we've got the guy from the Manhattan Institute, which is, of course, funded by millionaires. That guy, Ruff, who's out there, you know, again, you know, working on elections and things like that.
He's the guy who brought critical race theory to the attention of the universe.
Yeah. the non-existent critical race theory.
Well, that's a slight, of course, there's a problem. It doesn't exist, but, you know.
Yeah, well, but it exists in the minds of people.
It exists in the minds of people whose minds have been brainwashed.
Yeah, you know, probably tattooed in their minds by those Jewish space lasers. But
yeah.
Anyhow, so we've had that.
But, you know, truthfully, there is such a thing as critical race theory, and it happens to be accurate. It describes how laws and institutions are structured around racism and have been historically in American history.
Right. Government loans to black people for housing, you know, redlining.
Redlining, exactly. Not allowing black farmers credit through the Farm Credit Administration, and on and on and on and on.
And on and on. So those things did exist, but, of course, people don't want to, certain people don't want the rest of us to know about those
things. Well, racists don't. Yeah.
But, you know, but it's interesting that I mentioned Marsicano might be the leader. Josh Shapiro is actually running ads specifically attacking Marsicano. Last week we talked about
Mastriano.
Yeah. McSwain running ads against Marsicano Mastriano, because he...
Marsicano, whoever he is going to sue you.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Well, Marsicano, whether he's probably not going to win his primary because Donald Trump this week endorsed Jim Bognet. However, getting back to Bill McSwain, you know, took ads out against Marsicano, which is, I said last week, was an indication that Marsicano had the lead in internal polling. But this week, Josh Shapiro took out ads against him.
Mastriano.
Against Mastriano.
Right.
And so that's really, it's a curious thing. It seems that he's the candidate that the Democrats would prefer to run against. They view him as being too extreme for the mainstream of Pennsylvania. But, of course, that's rolling the dice. That's rolling the dice because if he could get elected...
That's right. You know, you ought to let the Republicans candidate for themselves, campaign for themselves. Don't give them a leg up.
Of course, this is an old trick. The former senator in Missouri there, what's her name?
Claire McCaskill.
Yeah, she once set it up so she would have one of these radical opponents, and she got him and she beat him. So it is a theory, but we're going to have to find out. We're less than 2 weeks away on this.
But meanwhile, you really can't say anything. It seems like it's Mastriano against Lou Barletta, but you don't really hear too much from either one of them.
No. Now, the more interesting, well, maybe not more interesting, but one of the other interesting things is Mastriano has run with Teddy Daniels. He convinced Teddy Daniels, don't run for Congress, come and run for lieutenant governor. And last week we noted that Teddy Daniels ran into a big stumbling block when his wife was given a protection from abuse order. But a funny thing happened at the end of this week that they had a hearing because it has to be a quick hearing. And the wife testified. And after she testified, Teddy Daniels' lawyer said, we're not going to call anybody. She didn't prove her case according to the law. And the judge agreed and dissolved the protection from abuse. So he moves back in with her? Well, whether she stays there or she gets out, he can't make her stay there, but he gets to go back in the house. I guess he gets his guns back. And he gets to say, see, this was all political.
Yeah.
So that's going to be an interesting dynamic because that Del Rosso lady has been working very hard We'll see. She seems to have some sort of an organization going on.
I wonder if this judge who found for Teddy Daniels was animated by the same 350-year-old legal scholar that Alito is animated by, who said that a wife can't be raped because when she marries her husband, she gives up her right to say no.
Oh, well,
which is what he wrote. That's what he said.
Yeah.
That's the great legal thinker that Alito says we have to follow.
This is what happens in Wayne County, you know.
What's happening in America?
What's happening in America? Like yes. Said, you know, now in Ohio, we had that awful, awful race between Josh Mandel and J.D. Vance. The Trump stuck his nose in at the last minute, and he pulled J.D. Vance across the line. And there's going to be a question.
Well, but also, that don't put down Peter Thiel's contribution.
Right.
Peter Thiel dumped into J.D. Vance's pockets $20 million. That's a lot of loot for one primary campaign.
Yep. And then we'll see what he spent on the general, and whether Tim Ryan, who's been positioning himself sort of as Sherrod Brown light, so to speak, can get those former union workers and whatever. Ohio's been trending more and more red, so we'll have to see. But, I mean, if he's going to do it, he has to win over the 20% that didn't vote for either Mandel or for Vance. There was actually 22 or 23%. There was a third candidate in there that moved up.
There were four candidates.
Yeah, but there was only three that were really, uh-huh. really seriously in it. So we'll have to see what happens there.
But getting back to Pennsylvania, Fetterman on the Democratic side seems that he's won, or he will win the senatorial nomination.
Yeah.
It'll be Fetterman and Josh Shapiro.
Yeah, the Politicos are consigned to that, even though a lot of the insiders wanted Connor Lamb. But I also had the opportunity to speak to the head of the Pennsylvania delegation of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives this week, and Joanna McClinton, and I, you know, pointed out to her, there was that article in the New York Times about why Democrats forgot how to talk to rural voters. It was from a couple people from the state of Maine. And we had a very animated discussion about, you know, leaving people behind and leaving votes on the table because you're not out there scurrying around for that. I mean, I mentioned, you know, what happened in Susquehanna County. You didn't even have people put up for office by the Democrats.
Right.
And they claim that they're aware of this, and they claim that they're going to work at this. But
nonsense! I'm sure they're aware of it, but they're not working it.
That's what I think. But Fetterman is working it.
He is. That's right.
Yeah,
he is. And but the machine Democrats, they're not. The corporate Democrats, they're not. The centrist Democrats, they're not. They don't agree with that. They don't think it's necessary. And also because, basically, they don't support the kinds of things rural people and working people require. They don't support them. Just like Manchin doesn't support them.
Well, they support, but they don't know how to sell it to them. You know, they support raising wages. They support unionization. They support you know, having better health care. They support having child care.
Some of them do, some of the time. I mean, look here. The day that the Alito thing broke, the Alito decision broke, the Democratic leadership went down to Texas to support Cuellar, Henry Cuellar,
right.
who is the only anti-abortion Democrat in the Democratic caucus in the House. What kind of a crackpot message is that? And their argument was, we got to embrace people who don't agree with us. Nonsense. You've got to beat the bad guys. That's what you got to do. And Cuellar's point of view is a point of view of the bad guys. You got to beat them. You not embrace them.
Right. Right.
Well, we're done for this week.
We'll see what happens. We want to wish everyone a happy Mother's Day.
Yep.
And like I said, we're only 9, 10 days away from the Pennsylvania primary. So we'll get our televisions back from all those repugnant ads.
Or maybe you'll see even more. Who knows?
Yeah, we'll see. And we also want to note that we passed the milestone. I mean, things are so crazy that we didn't even realize that the 1 millionth American to die from COVID, at least by some measure, was recorded this week.
Yeah. All right. That's it for now. See you next week.
See you next week.